And for our response, I'd like to introduce David Somerville, who is the president of the National Citizens Coalition in Canada, which has more than 45,000 members coast to coast. David believes strongly in the motto of his group, which is, quote, for more freedom through less government, close quote, and especially when it applies to welfare, he says. From what I've heard about him, I think it may also be true when applied to fishing as well, since I think that's his the area that gets almost as great passion in his mind. And I welcome Philadelphia Society trustee David Somerville.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I was delighted to be contacted by Commodore Lipset and invited to respond today to John Blundell and Madsen Peary. I both admire them a great deal. It's a very special occasion for me, which is why I decided to bring out this tie, this spectacular tie that was awarded to me some time ago by Madsen Peary, the Adam Smith Institute. And you can see by its style that it seems to be designed to bring light into the darkest recesses of government. Thank you for that, Madsen. There's an interesting story behind Madsen and Don Lipset and I in the National Citizens Coalition, and it touches on what John Blundell was speaking about earlier, about the transmission of ideas across boundaries. About 7 years ago, 8 years ago, Don Lipset brought Madsen Peary to speak in Toronto, and I attended the meeting and was just absolutely gripped and fascinated by what Madsen had to say. I knew I'd made a real find, and it took some talking, but I got him to come over to visit Canada and embark on some speaking tours. I had him back three or four times, in which he spoke in cities across Canada. We taped him, audio and videotaped him, and sent out about 3,000 to 4,000 of those. Madsen's just last year published a book called Blueprint for a Revolution, which I strongly recommend to you. We published that in Canada and did a controlled distribution of about 4,000 copies of those to all elected members of federal and provincial legislatures, the mayors of the 400 largest municipalities, to journalists, academics, opinion leaders in business, etc. And it's had an effect, a great effect. Privatization is firmly rooted in Canada now. The Liberal government in Ottawa has embraced it, which is the final bastion breached. And that was in large part due to this transmission of ideas that started with that meeting in Toronto. And in fact, it's had a spillover effect here as well. I put Madsen in touch with an American political advisor I know. And the end result of all of that is that the newly elected governor of New York State, George Pataki, is a major enthusiast for privatization and is going to be pushing ahead with privatization in that state. When I asked Don, you want me to give the response, what exactly is a response in Philadelphia Society terms? He said, well, really, David, it means that you can say anything that you like, but I think it would be appropriate if you said something about the subject at hand, so within those stringent parameters, I'll try to stick. I find this issue of the welfare state and welfare a quite fascinating issue because it's a nexus between some quite different areas, economics and social and cultural issues. And I am not one of those who buys into either the thought that this is strictly a question of the wrong economic incentives and disincentives, or this is strictly a social-cultural problem. It's got large elements of both in it, and I'd like to touch on both those areas today. On the economic side of it, some have defined the problem of welfare as a problem of poverty, and the problem of poverty is simply the absence of wealth and jobs and wealth-creating opportunities. And there is some truth in that. And some strides are being made in various countries to address that. In the United Kingdom, in the past 6 months, they've introduced something called venture capital trusts, in which private investors can invest money. It has to remain in there for a certain amount of time. It's designed, the trust, to invest in small startups. And if you leave your money in there for a certain length of time, you can take it out, I believe, at the rate of up to £100,000 a year tax-free. And that's going to create a huge pool of investment funds for small businesses and small business startups and expansions, which is a very healthy thing. In the United States here, I think it's quite possible that in the next 6 months or a year, you will see the capital gains tax here cut radically in half, which, as far as I'm concerned, is the single most dynamic stimulant you can have for the creation of new wealth and jobs. And that will help to create more wealth, more job opportunities, which will feed through to those at present who do not have jobs. There's some other, I think, very encouraging developments recently in the world of ideas, and that is of decentralization. And you all know that the bill has just passed the House to push down to the states welfare funding. And that, of course, just like in the free market for goods and services and the free market of ideas, is going to result in competition and innovation among the states. Now, the regime that has been passed is certainly preferable to the last one. I don't think it's perfect because it's still in the form of block grants. That is, the feds get the money and they ladle it out. I think the preferable solution would have been to just simply transfer back to the states the tax points and say, you are on your own. And that would have really... the existing system. George Pataki, when he was running for governor, paid a lot of attention to welfare. And so he contacted Mary Glass, who was the commissioner of the Department of Social Services in Westchester County, and started talking to her about welfare and how it was administrated and all the rest of it, and came up with some quite extraordinary figures just within New York State. And in New York State, they have they push down requirements for workfare to various county levels to administrate. In New York City, they had a total of 7.3% of the people on welfare taking part in some kind of workfare. In Westchester County, the percentage was 55.3%. Same overall program, different administrations, different people doing the job. Similarly, Mary Glass wrote back to Pataki and said about the amount of fraud in the system. And they found that they had devised two programs. One was the front-end detection system, the other was the back-end detection system to detect welfare fraud. When they brought this program in, they found out that 25% of the people applying for home relief were applying fraudulently. And by the end of the program, they brought out this detection program, it was 15% more of them were engaged in fraud. So that's a pretty spectacular number. Now, that's one county within New York State. Now, you can imagine what would happen if the welfare system was really pushed down, right down to the county level, and say, you fund it, you run it. And you know, of course, what would happen is that over a decade, two decades, the counties that are irresponsible and through whose irresponsibility they're destroying families and everything else would end up with huge tax base, huge tax burdens. And the people who are running a tight show, a good show, would be benefiting, and you see businesses moving and people moving and all the rest of it, and you would have a market developing. There are two other approaches on welfare I'd like to touch on that were mentioned by Madsen or John, and one of them is also within New York State, and some of you may have heard of it. It's a for-profit welfare company. It's called America Works. And what they've done is to completely turn around the whole incentive structures in welfare. And right now, at the very least, you could say that there is no incentive in state welfare agencies to keep people off the rolls, and once they're on the rolls, to get them off and keep them off. You could argue that there's actually a disincentive for them to keep people off the rolls or to get them off the rolls because, of course, that's jobs, isn't it, for the welfare bureaucracy. America Works has turned around the incentives. And this for-profit company is only really rewarded once they have trained and placed a welfare recipient in a job, and that person stays on the job for a minimum of 4 months. In the first year of operation, with a very small experimental project, they saved the state $15 million, and over 90% of the people that they had placed in jobs were still on the job. And that is an entirely different approach to welfare. John Goodman at the National Center for Policy Analysis has thought about another competitive market approach to the provision of welfare. And he said, look, the Salvation Army's overhead is about 14%. Most Department of Welfare overhead is about 70 or 75%. Why shouldn't a taxpayer be able to switch that amount of his tax dollars that he would normally give to welfare over to a private welfare provider? And every dollar that is switched over is deducted from the budget of the state welfare provider. So what you do is you set up competing providers of welfare services. So if you combine these things and you get innovation and competition going, there's all kinds of bright driving people out there. Just give them a chance to get these things going. I think there'd be quite astounding results. I'd now like to touch on the other side of it, the social cultural side of it. And Madsen mentioned that it would take a long time to get this thing unwound. I think we've got to realize it will take a very long time indeed. There has been grievous damage done to society. There is, in a sense, a lost generation whose values have been corrupted. It will take at least a generation, and possibly longer, if we got everything right today, before we could really start to rebuild things. So it is an awesome challenge. We're headed in the right direction. It's a fight worth fighting and dedicating ourselves to, and we'll get there. Thank you very much.